Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Tuesday, August 30th. Luke Mathers joins me this morning. Coming up, we will have Courier Newsroom Political Editorial Director Carolyn Fidler. Also, in just a few minutes, what's the real status of policing levels in Wisconsin, and whose fault is it? And we'll see how decisions by certain Wisconsin politicians not only impact the level of local law enforcement, they also impact the quality of our local schools. If you didn't stay up, and Luke didn't, so, I mean, we right away can say he's not the good luck charm in this case. The Brewers beat Pittsburgh 7-5 with a walk-off home run from Keston Hira. But the real big story was Garrett Mitchell. I don't know. Do we call him the kid? I feel like he needs something here. He's new. He's clearly going to be our hero here. He's dashing. And the kid can hit, you know. So he had a game-tying two-run homer in the eighth inning and, you know, set the stage for a Brewers victory. It did not always look inevitable by any stretch of the imagination. It felt like Pittsburgh was getting every break possible with defense and with some clutch hits. Corbin Burns more or less imploded again. I mean, he did go six innings, but it was kind of ugly. Rowdy Tellez went out with right knee discomfort. But I think the best part that you probably didn't catch, Luke, in the recapping was the bullpen phone wasn't working. And so when Craig Counsell was trying to get Suter to warm up in the bullpen, did you see what he did?
No, I didn't see this.
If you've seen Brent Suter's windup, he puts his both arms way up in the air like he's like a raptor about to take off flying or something like that. He does this on the mound every time. So there's Counsell, stands on the top deck of the dugout, top step of the dugout, and looks down to the bullpen and holds both his arms way over, you know, and bends his wrist like he's got a big old wingspan. And that's his way to tell him that Suter's got to warm up. And then he comes out and Devin Williams shuts the door on the rest of it. But that was hilarious. But yeah, this Garrett Mitchell kid, he might work out. I'm already nervous for him in the too good to be true department, you know, that he's going to pull a foul ball off the kneecap, you know, situation again, like we've seen before.
He better start to manage expectations. That's all I'm saying. He better have a little bit of a slump here. Everybody else has got to pick up the pace. Let him slump a little bit so that we can have adequate expectations for this guy. Because these first couple
appearances...
Did
you ever see Field of Dreams? No, he's got to be our hero.
These first couple of appearances are making him look fantastic. And I'm a little worried as well. That, like you said,
I want his family to go to every game. Because the joy when they show the family, you know, just going crazy in the stands. Again, that's just infectious. That's what you come to see a baseball game for.
Yeah.
But for Pittsburgh, that O'Neill Cruz, both his hitting, he hit the hardest. Now they measure everything thanks to, you know, amazing technology. So they measure the velocity of hits and especially home runs. And that was the fastest, hardest hit home run ever measured in Pittsburgh Pirate history, which again isn't that long in terms of, you know, the measuring of miles per hour of a home run, but like 118 miles an hour he hit that thing. And yes, of course, it led to the cliches about a cruise missile. But you know, he's on the lowly Pittsburgh Pirates. He has 11 home runs, six of them off Brewers pitching. So this is, you know, this is just, we have been just snake bit by the Reds, the Pirates, and the Cubs. And that's what's really keeping us from doing much with it. And of course, Luke saw none of this because he was telling me his story about, you know, how hard his life is, having to walk uphill to the radio station both ways in the driving snow with an alarm at 4 o'clock in the morning, which I think is actually, you know, back in my day, Luke, you know, when we used to get up then.
Well, what did you just not sleep?
But actually, it was 4:05 as well. Okay. I'm not gonna. I can't do that. I can't pull that one off. But no, there were many 4 a.m. alarms to turn on the various radio stations and make sure that the cows were happy. because we would hear from the dairy farmers around Rice Lake or West Bend, two places where I had the early morning shifts. If you didn't turn that transmitter on at 5 a.m. And get that music playing for the folks that were out there milking. So I feel your pain, although I still would contend you should have stayed up. But now that you didn't and we had this nice comeback, as you know, baseball is a game of superstitions. You have to continue this. How long did you watch the game until you called it and went to bed?
This is the problem is I don't have Bally Sports, so I just get to watch the updates of the game most of the time unless I'm with somebody that has
it. So this
it.
Is good. So we can continue this streak that you know, being superstitious, you can't actually watch a game, even if it's accessible to
it's
you.
It's not a streak, though, because I watch the game Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so there's no method to the madness yet. There's no pattern here yet that you got to force me into a pigeonhole of not getting to watch my Brewers.
I don't know. You watched on Friday. I mean, that to me kind of sets the pattern. It took us Saturday and Sunday, you know, to recover and crawl
out. But I watched both of those games, too.
I just say that's the makeup from the damage you did on Friday. That's my story anyway, and I'm sticking to it. Coming up next, when you demonize public sector workers and put massive restrictions on local budgets, you don't get to complain that fewer people are going into law enforcement. That's on the way. Also, you can get our daily newsletter. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be right back. Be a breezy one across Wisconsin today. Gusty northwest winds will keep a lot of us in the mid-70s today and tomorrow. But by Thursday, we will be on the backside of that high-pressure system. We'll get some southwest winds, and we'll get back into the low 80s. We may be pushing 90 by Friday with a chance for some rain as a weak cold front moves through. But otherwise, at this point, Labor Day weekend is not looking bad in the current forecasts. Though I will say, with that northwest wind blowing in, and most of our house faces north looking at Lake Wissota, there's a little nip in the air. Pardon the cliche, but you can feel it with a north wind now. The sun isn't coming up as early as it used to warm up the mornings, and a school bus just went by, which strikes me as a little odd because the first day of school is Thursday here in Chippewa Falls, but might be a practice run for the drivers or something like that. But it had that feeling, you know, with the between the cool breeze, the school bus coming through. I'm not trying to rush summer out of here. I'm just saying you can feel the transition is out there. And I'm saying that in a good way. I don't want summer to end, but when fall gets here, fall is gorgeous in Wisconsin.
Yeah, it's by far my favorite season, but I will not give up the last 2 weeks of summer.
Oh, no.
In my mind.
No, not at all. Like I said, pushing 90 by Friday makes me happy. There's definitely still some pontoon time in my forecast for this weekend, and hopefully for a little bit beyond. We mentioned the Brewers and Pirates, another good matchup between Milwaukee and Pittsburgh. You know who else likes a Milwaukee-Pittsburgh matchup? That would be the President of the United States, who is hitting both cities on Labor Day. He's coming to Labor Fest, Biden says, to celebrate the dignity of the American worker. And, of course, we know why this is. There's a huge U.S. Senate race here in Wisconsin and a race for governor. And then he'll go to Pennsylvania, where there is a huge race for U.S. Senate. And a big race for governor as well. Needless to say, that announcement will be greeted as any presidential visit will, with the partisan sniping back and forth. Ron Johnson posted from his official Senate account yesterday, "President Biden is coming to Wisconsin to celebrate Labor Day, but there's nothing to celebrate here." Wow. "There's nothing to celebrate here," says Ron Johnson. Those of you of my age will remember the old Pebbles and Bam Bam cartoon from the Saturday morning cartoons of the 1970s. And there was a character, Bad Luck Schleprock, whose whole signature line was wowsy, wowsy, woo, woo. And that is how Ron Johnson's coming off by. He won't even fight to bring jobs to his hometown of Oshkosh, where thousands of trucks could be built for the U.S. Postal Service. But he says, well, it's not like we don't have enough jobs in Wisconsin. So here he is saying, Biden's coming to Wisconsin to celebrate Labor Day, but there's nothing to celebrate here. Now, he does mention the usual boogeymen that come up this time of year, inflation, gas prices, the border, and crime. Senator, gas prices have gone down for 11 weeks in a row. Inflation's coming down. The border was never open. That's you obstructing any immigration reform. Every time you or somebody else tweets about, you know, how much drugs were seized at the border, that's proof the border control works, that they're being seized. And crime, again, never seems to be an issue with you guys until you're scaring people close to election season. So if you want to say there's nothing to celebrate here, the nothing to celebrate is a, you know, a senator who just wants to trash talk the state and, you know, talk about crime. You know, the crime numbers deal with law enforcement. And what is the condition of law enforcement in Wisconsin? And there's a new story out from Peter Cameron of the Badger Project, who notes one aspect of law enforcement in Wisconsin, but then I need to follow it up with a different report earlier from the Wisconsin Policy Forum. So follow along. There's two different aspects of law enforcement in Wisconsin. The news story from the Badger Project says the number of law enforcement officers in the state ticked down again in 2022, setting a new record for the lowest statewide total since the State Department of Justice started tracking numbers in 2008. Wisconsin has fewer than 13,400 law enforcement officers at the moment. That's down from 13,500 a year ago. And then the record high is nearly 14,400 in 2008. Now, these numbers exclude officers who work entirely in correctional facilities. So we are talking, you know, officers basically on the street. Now, while those decreases may seem small, they are occurring while the state's population is on the rise. So police departments have tried to relieve some of the burden. They are trying to experiment with sending non-police employees to answer some non-emergency calls. And of course, we understand that we are at a time of record low unemployment. We have the best employment numbers in over 50 years. We have an unemployment rate at a record low 2.9%. The national rate is 3.5%. But keep this in mind. Here's the other half of this, that while the number of officers are down, as the Wisconsin Policy Forum reminds us, police spending comprises a much larger share of municipal spending than in the 1990s. If you look at figures from 2018 and 2019, the Wisconsin Policy Forum found more than 250 municipalities statewide decreased their police spending between those 2 years, even during strong economic growth, because municipalities have been operating under strict property tax limits for more than a decade of Republicans running the legislature. Intergovernmental revenue from the state to local governments has also declined as a share of overall local revenue, thanks to Republican cuts. Those constraints on the growth of property taxes and state aid have contributed to the difficulties faced by municipalities in maintaining their services. So they maintain their police and fire as best they can, but it is then to the detriment of the other departments in their local budget. So when we're talking about, you know, crime in Wisconsin, and there are, you know, some places, Milwaukee especially, with violent crime that are a concern, again, I will note there's no serious Republican effort to run for sheriff in Milwaukee County to really try to say, hey, we've got a better idea, elect us. Instead, it's a scare tactic that's used, because remember, by and large in Wisconsin, crime is not near the top of somebody's agenda unless they're being scared about it at election time. So that's what we face when you've got Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson wanting to focus on crime when somebody like President Joe Biden comes to town, when there are larger issues at play at the kitchen tables of Wisconsin families. Ben Wickler is the state chair of the Democratic Party. He put it pretty well in his response in saying Joe Biden is the most pro-worker, pro-union, pro-job president of our lifetime. From the American Rescue Plan and the bipartisan infrastructure law to the recently enacted Inflation Reduction Act, Biden has worked alongside Democrats in Washington and Madison to create thousands of good-paying jobs, all while Wisconsin Republicans try to block that progress. While extremists like Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson turn their back on Main Street businesses and working families to enrich large corporations and wealthy donors, Biden and Democrats are working together to create an economy that works for working Wisconsinites. And Ben Wickler says, we're going to make sure voters know that before November. So there does not seem to be what you would call an enthusiasm gap with Biden coming to town. There's this concern that people didn't want Biden to travel. I think that, again, these are people buying into some old conventional wisdom about midterms and don't understand the mythic legend in the making that is Dark Brandon, and in terms of the things that have been getting done this year. Again, at the start of this year, you wouldn't have been faulted to say that Joe Biden and the Democrats look to be toast come November. But you'd have to really turn a blind eye to everything that's happened since to still contend that's where the easy money is because of the various things that have passed. And in fact, when Tim Michaels put up something snarky about Biden coming, needless to say, the Twitterverse is always quick to respond to Michaels. You know, Tim Michaels, Ron Johnson, Scott Walker, especially. I like how somebody has described them as national parks because they are so publicly owned lately, based on the responses that they get whenever they try to put up snark on Twitter. And so you see instead a whole string of either Dark Brandon memes or more like this, just all of the bullet points that have happened this year: the Inflation Reduction Act, the CHIPS and Science Act, the PACT Act for veterans who are exposed to burn pits, and remember how Republicans voted against that, the first major gun safety legislation in decades, taking out the leader of Al-Qaeda, historic job growth, historically low unemployment, actually expanding the NATO alliance, the American Rescue Plan, which has only led to the fastest jobs recovery in history. That wasn't inevitable, having a recovery this quick coming out of the pandemic. That took action and it took leadership. We could just as easily be in a morass right now, mired down in something like stagflation or worse, if we'd continue to have the poor leadership that we had once before. You had the confirmation of Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. You have our allies being rallied in support of Ukraine. And you have once-in-a-generation infrastructure investments. All of these things that were not inevitable. We have heard what former President Donald Trump and his supporters have had to say about the war in Ukraine. There are a stunning number of Russian apologists who are in the party that was once the party of Reagan, that was once the party that stood up to the Soviet Union and stood up for America to win the Cold War, and who now are completely shameless in the positions they're taking about Ukraine and Russia only because it is self-serving. And Luke, there is the list is actually bigger than I originally thought. Somebody else noted how Joe Biden continues to deliver in pointing out that there is both a new Harry Styles movie and a Taylor Swift album coming out in October. And again, you got to give Biden credit for all of these happy developments.
Thanks, Dark Brandon. Thanks.
I don't know. First off, Harry Styles and Taylor Swift are immensely talented. I'm a little old for the demographic, but I definitely appreciate the talent. But you know, it's a fair question. Would they really be producing like this if Biden weren't president? Who's to say? You know, that's one of those great things you can leave out there. The last bit I want to leave on responses to Tim Michaels when he talked about, you know, his family's construction business and digging trenches and stuff. Our friend Scott Ross notes, Tim Michaels is a rich kid from New York City whose daddy gave him a business, and he thinks he's more relatable than a public school teacher from Sheboygan County. We'll be back. You're up north.
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
Dress up like
hip. There you go. All right. Tuesday morning. Look over at the calendar there, Pat. It's Tuesday morning, August 30th. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow. I just had such a laugh during the commercial break. I'd already seen the first part of this that I was going to talk to Luke about. And I didn't see this, of course, because it happens during the game. But you know, at American Family Field up on the scoreboard, all the baseball games, they welcome all the groups that are there and other people can put greetings up on the board.
This I did see.
Oh my goodness. I saw this last night, but then there's a follow-up to it. Somebody put up here. It says, here's a screenshot. And here are some of the messages. Happy birthday, Cody, from your birthday buddy, Mel. Happy birthday, Mel, from your birthday buddy, Cody. Happy anniversary, Mike and Ron Lee. Good luck on the big race, Scott. And then Mark, your friendship means the world to me. Let's not wreck it. Wow. Friend zoned hard on a scoreboard in front of thousands of people.
Do you think he was planning on like proposing or something in the middle of the game? And like that.
Oh my gosh. I never even thought it might go to that, to that extent. So
they headed it off before it happened. So,
so here I am looking at things online here during the break. Barstool Sports had put up a note about it. Christian Yelich posted in the past hour, says, we were down two in the eighth inning. The whole dugout looked up. We saw this and said, let's win one for Mark. We got you, man.
So it's not my fault. It's not me at all.
It's poor Mark who was getting friend zoned.
They want it for Mark
publicly. That the whole team saw that and said, let's win one for Mark. You got to give Yelly and the team credit for a sense of humor on that one.
I hope that's the motto for the rest of the season. Then let's win it for Mark. For Mark,
let's win it for Mark. Yeah, and you know what? But let me quickly add: let's never find out who Mark is.
Yeah, that would,
because if Mark turns out to be a jerk or something, you know. So we're just gonna
bask in the idea of Mark, and yes, we want to root for the good part that could be.
Yes.
Mark.
Yep. And Mark, your lobster is out there someplace. It's just not this person who friend zoned you on the scoreboard. I was talking before the break about some of the reaction to what Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson were saying about Governor Evers coming to Wisconsin on Labor Day. He will be in Milwaukee on Labor Day, either before or after a stop in Pittsburgh. And I told you before Scott Ross's reaction as Michaels was saying how he grew up around the family construction business. My dad taught me how to dig trenches. My mom taught me how to drive trucks. And another friend here, Judd Lounsbury, puts up, the reality is Michaels didn't really join the company until he was 37 and started out as vice president of the company. A few years later, he started his unsuccessful run for U.S. Senate. Shortly after that, he moved his family to Connecticut. And now he's running for governor of Wisconsin. So private schools in Connecticut and New York were good enough for his family. But now he wants to come here. I love that his commercial has the little tagline, you know, Tim Michaels, conservative, outsider, something else. Like, you are so not an outsider. You ran for U.S. Senate against Russ Feingold in 2004 and got shellacked, and you've been donating to Republican causes ever since. You're not an outsider.
He lost a Republican primary in the state Senate to Scott Fitzgerald in 1998. This guy's been running for office for more than two decades, and his latest attempt to brand himself as this outsider is just hilarious, but it has been a while. It's been 18 years since he tried this. And so there's going to be a lot of Wisconsin voters that just forget that he's attempted and failed before.
Right. Fortunately, though, he has a record, and you've seen that come up in some of the other ads that are running on TV right now from various outside groups that, you know, note that his positions have been rejected by Wisconsin before, and they're wholly out of the mainstream now. As he runs against Governor Tony Evers, over at upnorthnewswi.com on our website, we have just posted some of the basically the print version of our one-on-one with Governor Evers. Our reporter Christina Laurie sat down with him late last week, and so we will be able to see and hear snippets of that later as she continues putting that together. But we do have the version that went up on our website. And so here are some of the takeaways that Christina Laurie talks about in the post about her interview. First, she notes that the state surplus was earlier this year estimated to be just short of $4 billion. And now it's going to be more than $5 billion plus another $1.7 billion in the state's rainy day fund. So she says, when she asked Evers about that, he says, quote, "It caught me off guard too. The Department of Revenue does this internally. They keep it to themselves. I probably got it one day before the rest of the world." She asked, "How does a governor find out about these things?" He says, "It's the phone call you hear from staff members at the Department of Revenue at the end of the month. And here it is, a big one." Asked, "What does it indicate about the state of the state?" Which is more than a speech in January. You know, at any given point, you can be asked about this. And Evers says that the record high surplus is an indication of the success of Wisconsinites being resilient during this pandemic. And I think that's a fair representation as well, that, again, people weren't looking for the silver bullet. This was done through somewhat slow but methodical planning and spending, a lot of the Main Street bounce back grants that Evers and the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation have been awarding to small businesses all throughout Wisconsin, rather than trying to go for one big thing. It's that hometown investment that's going to work. So we have this surplus, and Evers, as you know, last week released a plan that would provide some $600 million in tax relief for starters. He was asked more about the details of the plan and says it'll start with a tax cut of 10% for people who make less than $100,000 a year, which is most of us. On how it will help drivers, he wants to get rid of the mandatory minimum markup law, which is an obligation for gas stations to mark up their prices. The gasoline that's somewhat expensive here could be reduced by 18 to 30 cents as a result. Now, I'm going to pause there just to say that from a personal standpoint, I may be one of the last people, but I have always been against repealing the minimum markup law because I see it as the reason it's there is for anti-monopoly purposes, that a Walmart, Sam's Club can move into town, offer discounted gas, you know, cheaper than what they bought it for because they have so much money, put the local gas stations out of business. And then when they're the only game in town, they jack the price back up. So, I mean, nobody likes to hear something about, you know, a minimum markup for prices. But if you're going to have essentially predatory behavior on the part of large non-local companies, you have to have safeguards to make sure that they don't otherwise destroy your local business. Now, again, that's my point of view. A lot of people are ready to see the minimum markup law go away. Governor Evers is one of them, and that's in his plan. And I know a lot of Republicans feel that way too. So if Republicans ever wanted to work with Evers on a surplus plan, that probably is one point that they can agree on. When asked how the plan would help Wisconsin families, he talks about the childhood tax rebate. If someone has children, they'll have an opportunity when they fill out their taxes to basically count 100% of what they get off from the federal side. So that could save anywhere from $600 to $1,200, depending on the number of children. Then there's the caregiver's credit, where he says, whoever that caretaker is, will be able to get a break on their taxes. It'll be a little bit smaller than the childhood tax credit, he says, but if you have any expenses while caregiving, you can claim those and get a rebate on it too. Then asked about seniors, he notes that there's the homestead credit. It is primarily for seniors who don't have a great income stream. People who have no income, if they just take the time to fill out the form, they can get a relatively large, usually more than $1,000 break, the governor says. The plan indexes that to inflation and will automatically add an entire group of people who can claim the homestead credit. And there's also a provision in there for veterans. The governor told Christina there's a special property tax credit that veterans who are disabled or surviving spouses of veterans are able to claim. He says it's a significant plan that puts $16 million into that fund. It'll impact about 80,000 people in the state. Evers says, I'd estimate it would give each of them about $2,000. Now, it's important to note here that, you know, all of these various elements are kind of what I said a minute ago about the Main Street bounce back grants, that you in smaller pieces, rather than, you know, whether it's $4 billion to Foxconn or one massive corporate tax break that you claim will trickle down to everybody else, it's better to look at various segments of the population and see what would help them. With caregivers, it would be their expenses. You know, with seniors, it would be a homestead tax credit. So, and actually, that's the next part of Christina's story here, when she asked him how he devised the plan. And he said, we went for targeted tax breaks, trying to make sure we reach the people who need them the most. She asked if this plan would be any different if this wasn't an election year. She said, or he says, it wouldn't be any different. And it wasn't any different last January either, when he released a plan to deal with the surplus. He says, that's the point. Once we know what our available funds are, these are the things that we want to do. How quickly can this happen? He was asked, and Evers responded, I'd love to get it done right now. It can be done in a day, even if legislators come back with a different plan. And that gets to the notion again of this legislature, led by Republicans, staying home, putting themselves on a 10-month paid vacation while sitting on a $5 billion surplus, and the president of the Senate incorrectly saying that they're a part-time legislature. They're not. Legislatures in other states have strict rules on when their session begins and ends. Wisconsin doesn't. We pay you full time because you should be available to your constituents full time as lawmakers to make laws, to do things that will help people, especially when, you know, they're in trouble or when there are circumstances like a $5 billion surplus. So yes, the governor's right. This legislature could call itself back into session anytime. They don't have to take up the Evers plan at all. They can have their own plan. It might get vetoed if they don't work with the governor. But again, with $5 billion, if you can't work out a win-win where both Republicans and Democrats say, we got some of what we wanted, some of what we didn't, but some of what we did. If you can't pull that off, you're terrible at your job. There's no way to put it. So how does he, what does he expect to happen with the plan? He acknowledges it's likely not going to happen until the election is over, but at worst, it'll be in my next budget plan, which would be released early next year. And he is then asked, you know, what is it that he wants Wisconsinites to do about this? And he closes with, I just encourage people to vote. A lot of people are spending their efforts suppressing the vote. My goal is to get as many people voting as possible. I also think $5 billion is a lot of money, and we need to get it back into people's pockets. And that's that couldn't be more true. And I would tell you, we've gone through now multiple cycles of Department of Revenue estimates showing this surplus. I can assure you that if there were a Republican in the governor's office, the very first report that indicated a surplus, there would be a special session called, and that money would be out the door with people saying, it's your money. Now, they may send it out the door in tax cuts that are geared primarily to the wealthy. But my point being, they wouldn't just sit on it. They would act. They would say, this is the people's money. Give this money back to the people. Well, legislators, that's still true today. you're sitting on the people's money. Give the money back to the people. You can either do it in targeted fashion, like the governor's doing, or come up with your own plan. But the fact that you would just sit on this when caregivers, veterans, seniors, and parents could really use some assistance from you is saying something really unflattering about your sense of leadership. We'll be back with more. You're Up North. Morning across Wisconsin. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Wrightlow. The movie 2000 Mules is propaganda. That's it. 2000 Mules is propaganda. Keep it short. It is based on wild assumptions and yet has been able to gain a lot of traction in the right wing media bubble. And so Dinesh D'Souza has turned it into a book and probably expected it to be a bestseller. The publisher yesterday put out a full recall to bookstores and others. This book is not going on the shelf. And so again, put Dinesh D'Souza into that Scott Walker, Tim Michaels, Ron Johnson category of a national park because he's being so publicly owned. There's a lot of tweets out there that simply just begin, ha, 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 and on it goes. Because that's a publisher that does not want to get in trouble. Perhaps the publisher would have been wise to listen to Donald Trump's own Attorney General, Bill Barr, when he talked to the January 6th committee, when Barr physically literally laughed and scoffed at the claims that seemed to prove, quote unquote, that there was voter fraud in Wisconsin in the 2020 election. You have to remember that D'Souza, he's been pardoned by Trump, even though he had pleaded guilty to campaign finance violations. He claims that, you know, through examination of cell phone data, Trump supporters were able to show widespread use of ballot drop boxes by mules, hence the title, 2000 Mules. Barr noted for the January 6th committee, my opinion then and now is that the election was not stolen by fraud, and I haven't seen anything since the election that changes my mind on that, including the 2000 Mules movie. And Barr stops himself and starts to laugh about it. He says, basically, if you take 2 million cell phones and figure out where they are physically in a big city, like Milwaukee, for example, you will find that many hundreds of them have passed by or spent time in the vicinity of drop boxes. And the premise, he says, that, you know, if you go by five boxes or whatever it was, that's a mule, is just indefensible. And yet it is on that premise that the Assembly Elections Committee met in March in Madison and heard from right-wing activists who parroted those claims from D'Souza. They presented material that they claimed showed, quote, 138 people in Milwaukee, Racine, and Green Bay each went near a drop box at least 26 times and near a non-governmental organization at least five times between October 20th and November 3rd, 2020. But they refused requests to share any detailed data that would prove their claim, and critics were quick to show that cell phone location data alone does not put someone at a drop box, much less dropping off ballots inside of them, which, by the way, are inside of envelopes, so it's impossible to tell what the votes are inside of them. Ann Jacobs of the Wisconsin Elections Commission mentioned at the time that the drop box at One Milwaukee Library is directly below an apartment building full of digital pings from cell phones, laptop computers, tablets, other devices from people who are not physically using the drop box. And so Wisconsin Elections Commission Administrator Megan Wolf and Technology Director Robert Keough told the committee sometime afterwards, making unverified fantastical claims without consulting real election officials has the effect of diverting lawmakers and the public from tracking real issues in need of improvement that could end up causing real harm to Wisconsin elections. And that's the part that is true. There's real harm being done, as State Senator Jeff Smith told us yesterday, that when he has his listening sessions and as other candidates tell us when they work on doors, there are still many people who use 2,000 mules as their justification. And now, again, you may be saying, wait, if there isn't evidence that's shown, why are people believing this? Well, remember where I started. 2,000 mules is propaganda. Propaganda works in its packaging. Propaganda doesn't work in its evidence. It works in how you take the turd and package it and paint it and try to polish it and then present it. And sometimes somebody has to break it open for you to tell you that that's not what you think it is. But yet there they are. Sorry, I really got to Luke on that one. I'll have to work on my analogies. I'm sorry.
Sometimes the turd analogies hit a little close to home because I do have the dog, and therefore I have to pick up his poop, and therefore I can kind of vividly visualize you painting and then polishing and doing all those things to.
Well, and then what they're doing with this is they're putting that in a paper bag, lighting it on fire, and they're leaving it on the doorstep of American democracy and, you know, the integrity of fair elections. And the time that we have to spend first putting out the fire and then cleaning up our shoes, that's time that could be spent, as Megan Wolf and Robert Keough note, on things that are real. Elections take work. Elections take people. Elections take technology. And to keep them fair and accurate and accessible, it does not happen by itself. It does take work. And the people who have been doing this in Wisconsin and 49 other states are doing the Lord's work by some of them paid, many of them volunteers at the local level, to take our elections seriously, to treat them with the reverence they deserve and the respect that all Americans should give it. And most Americans did until very recently, when the propaganda originated by one person in support of another did its work. And we are going to have a real battle on our hands to get back to a point where there is a very small number of people who will continue to believe outright lies about the fairness of our election. I already hear you. I'm sorry, I got distracted by you were bringing up something here, and
music. I played some Taylor, and now I'm playing some Harry. You referenced both of them earlier, so it was Taylor Swift, and now it's a little Harry Styles.
Okay. I've, as you know, if you've been here since the first week, I've kind of wrestled with whether we're going to stick with, you know, commercially licensed music, or if we're just going to go toward, you know, simple jingles and stingers because, you know, the music itself is too distracting. Maybe that's annoying, but I'm starting to like this game. I really is. It's kind of like the old Johnny Carson Stump the Band, but it's, you know, Stump Grandpa instead. We'll have more in our next hour. You're up north.